This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, in the middle of the summertime, I always like to do something a little different on the show. And, well, today is one of those days. Now, over the years, you have heard me talk with great pride about my three kids that my wife Trish and I have been blessed with. And a few weeks ago, for example, my older daughter, Alyssa, she's the stand-up comic, she called unexpectedly into the show, and we had some great laughs. So she was talking about the women's soccer team. She thought I was being a bit sexist. Well, when she was in high school, Alyssa, she was a dedicated swimmer and an excellent scorer in lacrosse. And my younger daughter, Samantha, she's the one who was a terrific all-around athlete. She played basketball, soccer, also a top lacrosse player. She graduated from Michigan, and these days she works for the PGA in corporate partnerships. And then there's my son, John. Now 35, John was a superb baseball, ice hockey, and soccer player growing up. And he really began to shine in high school in ice hockey and baseball. In fact, he was named to the New York State Empire State Games 2 years in a row as a defenseman in hockey and in baseball. Well, he started on the high school varsity baseball team as a freshman at shortstop. Played a lot of travel sports and hockey and baseball before heading off to Harvard, where he focused on baseball, but did play on the Harvard JV hockey team. Now, John was drafted and signed after his junior year by the White Sox. He also played in the Mets organization and also played some independent league baseball as well. He went on to Columbia Business School, where he focused on finance, and these days is a highly successful, a highly regarded expert on investing for Omega Advisors, with John's specialty being on Silicon Valley tech stocks and new ventures. But most importantly, John and his wife, Karen, who is also a top athlete, they have a daughter, Riley, who is 15 months old. And I thought it would be interesting on the show this morning, again, something a little different, to get John's views on sports parenting, especially now that he's about to join the ranks of sports parents. And to that end, my son, John Wolf, joins me this morning by phone. John, how you doing?
Hey, Dad. Good morning.
Yeah, well, I must tell you, it gives me great pride to talk about you and your sisters, and of course, you and your siblings give your mom and me great joy. And as you know, clearly, you grew up in a sports-oriented family, so I am interested that now you become a recent father. How are you looking at sports for your daughter, Riley?
Well, given that she's not even 16 months old, I think we're jumping the gun a little bit.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, she is almost 16 months, and what about getting her on a travel team for soccer?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I should be asking you for advice. I think you did a pretty good job over the years. There's a lot to consider. Maybe I should ask you, when did it really start when myself, Alyssa, and Samantha were growing up? Because I guess my first impression is that Riley is still pretty young. But I will say, in the back of my mind, there's a lot of things that I know a lot more about today than I did when I was growing up. And not so much from a travel team or a specialization perspective, but more from, you know, the importance of nutrition from an early age. As it relates to sports performance, you know, proper teaching, right? I mean, there's a lot of programs out there today that, you know, kind of showed up late in my career, But, you know, things that come to mind that I probably could have benefited a lot from when I was younger are things like Pro Swing, you know, Dan Gray. You know, I met Dan when I was a freshman in college, and he was fantastically helpful in my baseball career. But, my gosh, what if I met him when I was in middle school? That could have been a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, injury prevention. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really, you know, I hope Riley, who, as you said, is 15 months old, I hope that she, you know, finds a sport that she enjoys and she has fun with it. And hopefully it's perhaps a sport that we can share together would be a lot of fun, the same way you and I have shared baseball over the years.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe, but of course, time does march on. And yeah, I do recall back when you were probably 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and the question even then, of course, sports parenting was very much in full swing back then, but not perhaps to the extent it is today. Sports parenting, as I've said many times on the show, just gets more and more complicated with each passing year. Now, when you started out, I remember having conversations with your mom about, well, you know, I think it's important. We want our kids to play sports, but there's a huge variety of sports for kids to choose from. I don't think it's necessarily a smart idea to either nudge or gently push John into one of the sports that I know well. Now, when I was growing up, you know, I played baseball, of course, football, and basketball. I like to joke that, you know, soccer hadn't been invented yet, or even for that matter, lacrosse. But when you were, you know, 5 or 6, you know, and I knew something about soccer. I had covered soccer as a sports writer, but I wasn't totally really ingrained with the fundamentals of the sport or how to teach it. But it was clear that this was something that was becoming more and more popular. It was obviously a social kind of event to be in a youth soccer team. And then you eventually migrated. You played some basketball. You fell in love with ice hockey, a sport that I've always loved, but I can't skate at all. And, of course, baseball was something I did know something about. But I always felt it was important to let the child sort of find their own way as what sport they wanted to play. I guess you were somewhat intrigued with football, but not necessarily to the point you wanted to play it, even though I had played football in high school and a little bit in college. Look, so now that you're a dad, what do you think? What is your approach going to be with Riley in terms of, are you going to let her pick and choose a sport she wants to play? Or are you going to say, you know, Riley, maybe you should consider, you know, playing golf, for example, or some other sport?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. My hope is to expose her to a lot of sports and see what she naturally gravitates towards. You know, growing up with you as my dad, obviously, you know, part of the fun of playing baseball, but also part of the challenge at times was being in your shadow, and obviously, you know, playing on teams that you had played for, you know, 30 years or I don't even know how much, you know, long prior. You know, there are a lot of guys that remembered how good you were, and so I kind of sometimes felt I had to live up to that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, you know, playing ice hockey where you couldn't skate gave me the freedom to try a new sport, you know, with no kind of like preconceived notions from other players or you know, scouts or coaches or what, you know, things like that. So I guess my hope with Riley is that we can expose her to several sports and see what she enjoys. But I also remember situations from my childhood that I thought were kind of ahead of their time. And that obviously reflects upon you in that, you know, like things like baseball, we really didn't get into it in an organized way until I was probably a little bit later than the average kid. You know, T-ball and things like that where the game moves so slowly and kids don't throw strikes. You know, I was playing a lot more ice hockey and soccer as a young kid. And then as I got older, I played more, you know, organized baseball. But I thought that was pretty smart on your part to hopefully make the game more enjoyable as opposed to, you know, being bored or distracted at times.
Yeah.
So I'll try to take some of those, you know, teachings and apply them to Riley as well.
Well, you know, it's just to me personally, of course, since you're my son, I'm talking with my son, John Wolf. It's just fascinating to me to have this conversation because it's sort of like getting a real good look at maybe some of the things I did well as a dad, as a sports parent, and perhaps some of the things I didn't do so well as a sports parent. It's a very complicated field, and it gets more complicated with each passing year. Let me do this. John, I want to take a pause right here. We'll do a sports update. But when I come back, I want to continue our conversation. Among the things I want to talk about are your views regarding video games. And what do you think about that? Is that really a sport? I know you played a lot when you were a kid. Tell me about that as you look ahead as being a sports dad. And we'll talk more about your experiences in ice hockey and in baseball. But first, we'll take a timeout. Stay with me. I'll be back with more after this.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
My guest this morning on the Sports Edge is my son, John Wolf. We're talking about his being a sports parent, although his little one, Riley, is only 15 months old. But, you know, I'm curious to get his perspective on, as he looks back, on his experiences going through youth sports, right through middle school, travel teams, high school, college, and into the pro ranks. I'm curious to get his thoughts about how sports have changed since he was a kid growing up and how he might want to make some changes or do some progressive things as he and his wife Karen take care of Riley. Now, before the break, John, I'd ask you about the advent or the impact of e-games, video gaming. For old school guys like me, we don't see that as a sport. I know it's extremely popular. I know that people say this is just going to take the world by storm. I know you grew up playing some video games and stuff, but now those games have become very, very sophisticated. Tell me what your you and your buddies, when you talk, what about video games? Do you see them just as a distraction, a pastime, or do you really think this is something that kids ought to be really focusing on as a possible way to go to college or even have a career?
Well, I guess this is one of those categories where maybe you failed as a sports parent because when I was when I was younger, I was pretty darn good at video games. And if I didn't spend so much time outdoors or reading books, maybe I could have pursued a different career in gaming.
I've never heard this comment before, so I am stunned and flabbergasted. I have to mention this to your mother, because it was your mom's idea that you pay attention in school and read books, okay? Just make that clear.
Well, yeah, I had some real talent on old school Nintendo, I could have missed my calling. But look, the conversation of whether it's a sport or not is a difficult discussion. But I will say, I have always enjoyed watching people that are the best in the world at their craft, whether it's video gamers, whether it's poker players, whether it's chess masters. I think there's something incredibly enjoyable about watching people who excel in something that is complex. And I think video games certainly are part of that collection. And even in college, long before, the advent of Fortnite and Twitch and League of Legends and all these other games that are taking over the world, I do recall vividly, I had 8 roommates in college, and I wasn't particularly that good, but they would play this game called Halo, and they would have hours-long tournaments, and it was actually a very enjoyable, spectator sport, if you will. Because they were talented, and it was fun to watch for me. This world of e-gaming doesn't really surprise me as much as perhaps others. So that's kind of my take.
I'm listening to all this, John. I'm thinking, geez, costs a lot of money to go to college. I'm glad to hear that money was well spent on watching other kids play video games.
Well, if only I had the foresight to actually turn that into some type of online ecosystem, it could have been well worth your money.
Okay, let's talk about some more of the traditional sports that I'm more familiar with than League of Legends and Twitch and everything else. You played a lot of different sports. As I mentioned, you were you played ice hockey and baseball and soccer in high school. You played baseball and hockey in college. You were drafted by the White Sox after your junior year. You were signed by a longtime White Sox scout, John Tumminia. He had seen you at a workout, was impressed with what the actions you showed, and he drafted you. So you go into the world of pro ball, which for all, all aspiring young athletes, this is a dream come true. You reach that level of being a pro ball player. No, you weren't a high draft choice. You weren't somebody who signed for millions of dollars, but you had the chance to at least go and play pro ball and to see for yourself just how you stacked up against other ball players, other guys who were in the pro ranks who wanted to go on to the major leagues. Tell me about that experience in terms of when you were playing with the White Sox and then with the Mets. You go down. You're playing every day with guys about your age, and you're looking around. You're saying, "I wonder how I compare or match up against these other guys." What were your takeaways from that?
Well, the best part about pro ball was that there was just more time to play video games. And you didn't have to go to class all day to just wait to get back to the video games.
This interview is not going the way I thought it would. Okay, go on. So when you're not playing video games back in the motel or whatever, you're at the ballpark. So,
pro ball is for me it was a dream, and showing up in spring training and. Being mixed in with guys from UCLA and big time programs, as well as guys that were straight out of high school, first round draft picks. I mean, there's certain players who, you can just tell right away, the way they swing the bat, the way they throw the ball, the way they carry themselves. I mean, I remember the White Sox shared a facility in spring training with the Diamondbacks, and I was playing third base. And I think it might have been the first spring training game, or maybe it was extended spring training because it must have been after the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And, Justin Upton had just signed, first round pick. So forgive me if I get my dates confused, but it was early on in his career. And, just watching him play, I think I was playing third base, and he hit a ball so hard that I don't even think I saw it. And if it had hit me, it would have killed me. And he was playing in a different level. And there's guys like that. And it gives you a whole appreciation of how good these players are. And then, of course, there's guys who, are good players, but, they're, on any given day, they look like normal humans, but some of them just keep getting better. And that's a powerful thing, the ability to compound your talent over many years of playing pro ball. Guys who perfect their craft. The guy that comes to mind is Dan Murphy, who I played with, with the Mets in their farm system. Murph would show up every day. He always had great hands, always was a good hitter, but he turned himself into a great hitter. That was just years of compounding talent, minor, improvements every year. He'd come back and just say, wow, this guy turned himself into a, not only a major league hitter, but one of the best hitters in the league. That watching things like that happen over time was for me, not being as talented as those guys, it was a lot of fun to watch them go about their craft.
I mean, the guys you mentioned, obviously, and I had the same sense of the distinction, like a Justin Upton. Again, he was an 18-year-old kid, first round draft choice. Clearly, he was just he had gifts. That were just extraordinary. I remember way back in the day when I played, there were, there was always a handful of guys that were like, these guys are unbelievable, and everybody else is really good at baseball, but they're not at that level. It was always like you'd sit there and scratch your head and say, well, how do I get to be that good? Well, you would be that good if you had those gifts from God. But, you mentioned Murphy, who was, you know, an excellent hitter, but made himself into an even better hitter. Other guys I know you've mentioned over the years you played with, like Carlos Gomez and Wilmer Flores and Ruben Tejada. I know you batted and competed against the old St. John's ace, Craig Hansen, and Adam Ottavino. So you get a pretty good taste of just how good these guys really were and how you stacked up against them.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to watch these guys. You know, I'm now getting to be – it's weird when they call these guys, you know, veterans on TV and, you know, wow, this guy is pretty old. And, that's what I look like, and I'm the same age. So makes you appreciate that these guys have lasted a long time in the big leagues. And that list is – it's a long list. Good or bad, a lot of the guys I played with the Mets on that 2007 team, all of them kind of made it to the major leagues, except for me. So,
all of them?
You know, cut the dead weight.
all of them got to the bigs except you, is that correct?
A lot of guys. It really was a really good team. Looking back, it was Josh Tolley.
Sure.
John
Neat.
Dan Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ike Davis was a little too young. I'm forgetting a few names. Bobby Parnell.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Lagares, Ruben Tejada, Wilmer Flores. Gomez was traded by then, but he was there prior to that season. The list goes on. There's a lot. There was a catcher, Butera.
Sure.
Who was traded, but he was part of that crew. I think it was Drew Butera.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of names, but we were all in the mix.
Well, as I said, it was as you said, it had to be a lot of fun. And again, to play at that elite level, where if we're playing against guys from not just the top college programs, but kids out of great junior colleges or high school, kids coming from the Caribbean. It really is eye-opening, but you get a real rare opportunity to see just, you look through that prism to see just how good you are and how far you had come. And I remember going through the same thing myself when I was playing ball, back in the Tigers organization. All right, let me, John, we're talking
about... Or said differently, how far you have to go.
Well, that's a good perspective as well, because, less than, it's about 10% of all kids in pro ball ever have a real meaningful major league career. The numbers are staggering. It's all about guys not getting to the top. And once you get to the top, how difficult it is to stay there. John, let me take another break. When I come back, we'll continue talking about your world as an athlete and now, of course, as a sports parent yourself. And we'll shift it from baseball into ice hockey. Stay with me. Hey, don't forget, Ed Randall will be by here this morning at 9 o'clock. And, of course, Ed will be talking baseball with you. Make sure you stick around and tune him in. And please, I always ask you to check out my website and my blog at AskCoachWolf.com. Or you can also follow me on Twitter at #AskCoachWolf. And please don't forget to check out my book, now available as an audiobook, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. In fact, there's an entire chapter in that book which is devoted to sports psychology and sports parenting. What is the right age, whether you should get involved with your youngster in terms of the mental side of sports. Now, right now, I'm talking with my son, John, who, along with his wife, Karen, are the proud parents of Riley Jane Wolf, who is all of 15 months. And we're talking about sports parenting and John's thoughts about, what's going to happen, his attitude and approach when Riley gets to be old enough to start thinking about playing sports. John, we were talking in the last section about baseball and the wonderful experience you had playing in the minors. And I know you ran into some terrific coaches. Another one of the guys you've always admired is Nick Leyva, who was a big league manager and was in the big leagues as a coach for a number of years. And Nick worked with you in the White Sox organization. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Nick Leyva, also known by his players as Cuz, was great. I mean, it was a little bit of a, I felt bad for him at times because he was dealing with a bunch of rookie ball and single A players. And he probably had spent, I don't even know how long in the big league. So he probably saw some baseball that he wasn't prepared to watch. but, you know, one of the things that I took from him, even as I coach or volunteer coach here and there, is, you know, I was his starting shortstop for, you know, 3 or 4 months with the White Sox and the minors. And then, of course, as it happens every year, the draft came along and they just so happened to pick up a shortstop, a kid named John Shelby, a good player in the fifth round, and gave him some money. And so Nick kind of, you know, let me know that they wanted to see what he could do. And so I was going to become more of a role player and take a back seat to the new draft pick, which I totally understood. But what was curious, other than having that conversation, is that when I was starting every day for 4 months, Nick didn't spend a ton of time talking to me. He kind of let me go out there and do my job. But then when I was on the bench, being more of a role player, coming in for the occasional defensive replacement or pinch hitting situation, you know, Cuz spent a lot of time talking to me and the other bench players, role players. And I finally asked him one day, I said, why are you spending so much time focusing on the guys on the bench? Like, shouldn't you be spending time focusing on the superstars, you know, in the field? And he was like, Wolfie, you know, the guys in the field are doing their job. They're engaged. They're playing the game. They know what to do. You know, he's like, I got to keep my guys on the bench focused on the game, engaged. And because, we might need you late in the game and I can't have you drifting off or not being engaged. I need to keep them focused. And so I always thought about that he spends more time talking to his role players than he does to his starters. And you know, I think that is a pretty powerful way to manage a ball club.
Yeah, I agree. That's a tremendous insight, and I'm glad that lesson has stayed with you because that's the kind of tip coming from Nick Leyva, who's a lifer in baseball. That's good stuff because, unfortunately, too many times the coaches tend to focus all their efforts on their starting players, and they just sort of forget about the guys on the bench and not realizing those guys could really play an important role in the outcome of a game. John, let's turn now from baseball into the world of ice hockey because you've had these parallel paths in those fields and in those sports, and I'm curious. I mean, you played. And again, as I said a few minutes ago, I didn't really have any background or experience in ice hockey. I love the sport to watch it, but I can't skate at all. All I know is I spent countless hours, sitting in freezing cold rinks watching you play. But, you know, you played against kids who also went on to have pretty good careers in ice hockey, at the collegiate and in some cases in the NHL. I know... when you were playing in the Empire State Games, which was a top-level competition in New York, when you were in high school, you played against guys like Chris Higgins and people like that. I mean, were those guys to you, was a kid like Higgins clearly a superior hockey player compared to the rest of the really good hockey players around him?
I think when we played against Chris Higgins in the Empire State Games, we lost 10-1. And a reason why I remember that is I think I had the one goal for us and he had the 10 goals for Long Island. So I think he was pretty good. And, you know, obviously on that team was, Eric Nystrom and Mike Komisarek and guys like that. So, you know, you have a couple NHL players on a high school team, that's they're going to do some damage. But, yeah, he was a pretty special player. You knew that at a young age.
And when you were playing up during your middle school years, you were playing out of Connecticut and Darien, and you were playing against, again, Connecticut obviously has great hockey as well, like a player like a Hugh Jessamine who went on to be a first-round draft choice. But even at that age, was it clear that Hugh was going to be a top player in college?
I mean, Hugh was a superstar growing up. He was a big body with good hands. You know, kind of built in that Eric Lindros kind of model of player.
Mm-hmm.
The game kind of changed a lot over the last 15 years or so since, you know, I was in high school or, you know, playing through college. And so I think, you know, there were certain changes, you know, in terms of what types of players were more desirable. But yeah, Hugh was always, you know, one of the top players around. I mean, he was a huge star at Dartmouth. But you know, then it just kind of, you know, it's unclear kind of how the game evolved, but you had guys, you know, kind of, come out of programs, even guys I remember that grew up playing with, myself and Hugh as well, guys like Ryan Shannon, you know, who ended up winning Stanley Cups, in the NHL. And so it's hard to say, you know, who kind of becomes a superstar at each level, but, I mean, to be a first round pick like Hugh, you have to be a pretty special talent.
Yeah, I mean, there are parallels, obviously, between hockey and baseball in terms of trying to spot kids and trying to project how they're going to develop. In fact, it's funny, I was just thinking about that Darien team you played on for a couple of years, really good ice hockey players. One of your teammates was Matt Madelon, who eventually went on to become a top lacrosse goalie, as I recall, and is now the men's lacrosse coach at Princeton. I mean, it's amazing how all these various, again, we talked a little bit about specialization and the fact that you didn't. Obviously, Matt didn't either. He went from being a great hockey player to being a great lacrosse player. Those skills transfer and transition. Looking ahead, what are your views about specialization for Riley or any other kids you may have?
Yeah, it's a good question. But, you know, now that we're talking about all these guys who, you know, became big-time stars at the highest levels, you know, it's kind of funny. If I look back at my career, if I had known, if I had a crystal ball and I had known that all these guys would become NHL stars or Major League Baseball stars or, you know, first round draft picks, you know, it makes you wonder, like, maybe I could have used a pat on the back and say, hey, John, like, you know, don't get too frustrated. You're playing against some pretty good players. Cause I think sometimes you come home and you're like, wow, like, I'll never be as good as Hugh Jessamine or Eric Nystrom. And you're like, oh yeah, well, they're also going to be, you know, first round draft picks. So don't feel too bad.
Again, that's the thing. You don't have that kind of perspective when you're just a kid. You're just trying to go out and you're living up to your own potential. But yeah, this is what happens, and it's that pyramid of competition in amateur sports. It gets steeper and steeper as you climb up the ladder. But again, it's the kind of thing where, you know, when you have a few years pass and you look back and you say, you know what, geez, I'm sure glad I was so privileged and fortunate to have that opportunity to at least experience that, to see for myself just how good I was and how good I was against some of the very best in the business. John, I'm afraid...
Yeah, to answer your question on specialization, though, I think I struggled with burnout at times. And so, you know, for me, and this is a, you know, a personal choice, you know, for me, as the seasons changed, you know, for me, it provided a mental break from hockey or baseball, and it kept the sports fun for me. So for me, you know, having those, you know, three sports may have been too much. And you know, naturally soccer for me fell to the wayside through high school. But for me, having the hockey and baseball switch per season, you know, gave my brain a break from, you know, playing one sport constantly. So, you know, every athlete is different. But for me, it you know, when the winter season came around, I was genuinely excited to go play hockey because, you know, I had played baseball all summer, and that worked for me. But I can see why other kids might prefer to play one sport all year round and just focus on that, and maybe they can improve and get to the next level faster. But for me, you know, I felt that burnout, especially in hockey towards, you know, the end of my senior year of high school. And it's tough to come back from that once you feel that feeling.
No question. Burnout is a real growing problem with kids today who find themselves playing that same sport all year round. And I'm glad you're sensitive to that, because that'll help guide you as you steer Riley through her various sports. John, obviously I could talk to you for a good long time. I have found this to be just generally fascinating and intriguing, and I thank you for taking some time this morning to come on and talk about your experiences now that you are on the brink of becoming a sports dad yourself. Thanks, John.
My pleasure. Maybe next time we can talk about all the mistakes we made.
I don't think I made any mistakes. Thanks, John. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dad.
All right, let me take a quick break. I'll be back with more. Stay with me.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Okay, I obviously very much enjoyed talking with my son, John, about his experiences as an athlete, and obviously thrilled that he was able to come on this morning and talk really quite candidly about everything from his thoughts about video games to his years as a ball player and as a hockey player, and now that he's a sports parent himself, what he's looking forward to in terms of making sure he doesn't make the same kind of mistakes that perhaps I made. But again, I thank John. Obviously, we're thrilled that he's done well and he's enjoyed his years in sports. I should point out, by the way, that John is now, he is 35. He still plays a lot of amateur hockey, still plays a lot of semi-pro baseball. So obviously, he still has a great enjoyment for those sports. Okay, that's going to do it for me and this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Tommy Lugauer. Please stick around for Ed Randall. He's up next. I'll see you next week right here on the Sports Edge.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.